sound was clear and coming from the attic. It sounded like children's voices, and I heard one sentence repeated over and over.
Bitch, better have my money.
What did they say?
It's your turn. It's your turn. It's your turn.
What?
It's your turn.
What?
It's your turn.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
Regular show.
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Yes.
I'm going to kick it off here.
I even have a chance to ask you if you're going to kick it off.
I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to kick it off. We have a listener mail / advice on advice.
All right. This is from Michael F., who sends us advice from time to time. This is a segment called Advice on Advice, where we find advice on the internet, or Michael F. sends it in, and we give our advice upon that advice because it is unqualified.
And it stinks.
And there you go. Hashtag advice on advice.
So here we go.
It's going to be a juicy Michael
this
F. special.
This one is about the grandparents and the grandkids.
Okay.
Dear Amy, I have 4 adult children and 3 grandchildren.
Okay.
They all live 2.5 hours away and have very successful, fulfilling lives.
Great.
My husband and I couldn't be prouder. They usually call every week or so, and I send an occasional text or email. The problem is our daughter-in-law, who wants nothing to do with us.
Okay.
She's the mother of our only grandchildren. She refuses to visit.
Oh, she has all 3 of the grandchildren. Yeah. All right.
She refuses to visit, especially on the holidays. When we visit, she is pleasant but seems to barely tolerate us.
Okay. She doesn't like you.
Yeah. We want to see more of our grandsons, but we're not permitted to babysit. And if I ask to take them to the park, etc., she ignores me, hoping I will let it go, which I do to keep the peace.
Yeah. And it's not really you don't have a lot of pull here.
Yeah. I have spent many a sleepless night trying to figure out what I've done to her and cannot think of a thing. Honestly, in the 10 years that they've been married, I've never said a mean word or offended or offered advice, even with the new babies.
Hmm.
I say nothing to my son. I know he sees her treatment of us and feels guilty, but fighting about it isn't worth it to him.
You assume he feels guilty. He may not care.
He may not care. He's like, I'm just...
Yeah, I'm not getting in this. My name is Bennett and I'm not in it. You know, this is between you ladies. Hash this out.
Yeah, I agree that his wife has to come first, but we're not sure if our other 3 children plan on having kids. So these may be our only grandchildren.
Oh, but you only thinking about yourself right now.
Mm-hmm. The boys love to see us, and I've heard the oldest asking if he could go home with Grandma and Grandpa, and Mom always says no.
Mm-hmm.
We just came home from a visit, and it was worse than ever. I'm depressed over the situation. I do not know what to do. Signed, Anxious Grandma.
It's so bizarre to me that we get these, especially from grandparents, we get these this piece of advice, and they're shocked that they cannot control someone else's children the way that they control their own children.
Yeah.
And they also, for some bizarre reason, even though I think we live in a very kind of individualistic and hyper-individualistic and modern society, like, this is common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it is common that people don't like their in-laws.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's like an age-old thing.
Yeah.
But now, because in-laws don't really provide the kind of emotional and financial support that they used to, and you're 2.5 hours away from them, why should you have to F with them at all?
Yeah. Right. If they're not doing...
Yeah.
If it's not like a beneficial relationship.
No. This woman doesn't feel like she apparently doesn't need them. And we don't know... I mean, it's sad for the kids, but there may be a reason why this woman doesn't want her children spending time with the grandparents. I don't know. And maybe it's something that she doesn't want to discuss with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? Who knows? Maybe it's something that a way that they feel about something, or something in their home, or the culture. Who knows?
Yeah. Or they could be, like, these big old racists. And they don't know. They're just like, this is fine.
This is fine. What do you mean everyone hates Jews?
Yeah.
You know? What's the big deal?
Yeah, she does it. She's like, can't think of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, maybe you can think of a thing.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Are you
can't
sure?
think of anything? Because, like, you're not perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Well, this is the thing that I don't think they're being introspective enough.
Yeah.
They could also just ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And also, if they get an answer, like, oh, hey, you're a racist, it's like, no, that's just...
Yeah. No. Or how about, or something like, you know, and this is going far afield, but it does happen, you have guns in your house, and I don't want my children mm-hmm. spending time at your mm-hmm. house. Because I've heard people say things like that before, and that's completely legitimate.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You know?
And, yeah, or being prepared for the answer.
Or you used to beat my husband when he was a child. I'm not having my kids stay with you.
Yeah.
Because you use corporal punishment, and I don't trust you.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Right, yeah. Could be it. Right? Yes.
Because this woman may know more about them than they think mm-hmm. she knows. But let's hear.
Yeah. Dear Anxious, you have kept silent in order to keep the peace, but this doesn't seem like peace as so much as a cold war.
Okay. I like it.
You have nothing to lose at this point, and so I hope you said...
You've got nothing. You've got nowhere to go.
I hope you and your husband will be brave enough to have a conversation with your son and daughter-in-law, respectfully asking them if there's a specific reason they seem so hesitant to let you play a larger role in the lives of the children.
Yeah. You know, we just don't want Nazis in our home.
You might want to draft an email where you say, we notice that when it comes to the kids, you seem hesitant about letting us spend very much time alone time with them.
Wait, an email?
Yeah.
Does that sound... What? I mean, a phone call.
A phone call,
face-to-face.
Yes. This is a sensitive thing, not an email.
You draft don't start an email.
We'd love to be more involved in their lives and hope you can help us find a way to do that. If there's something you think we need to do differently, please let us know. Mm-hmm. We're absolutely bananas about the boys and want to be closer to all
bananas?
Of you.
Bananas? You might get ostracized even further for...
You're trying. Good for you.
I think that's terrible advice. I think that an email is a really impersonal way to handle things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a step back from the direction they should be going in, yeah. which is having a face-to-face with them.
Right.
I mean, they do visit. At a certain point, the children must go to sleep mm-hmm. or be doing something else. And then, you know, they could just say, look, we feel that, yeah, we'd like to spend more time with the boys. We feel like you guys don't trust mm-hmm. us with them, or, you know, there's some kind of barrier here. Like, we just want to know what it is. Mm-hmm. If we're at an impasse, we're at an impasse. Let's just continue to have the holidays if we can. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Exactly. Because
you can't make... And I think this is the hard thing about, you know, as someone who's grown up in, like, a non-family family, my family's pretty much like, hey, hang out with us, don't hang out with mm-hmm. us. There's not really a lot of pressure. That's not the situation in most families. But the fact of the matter is, these people are all adults,
yeah.
and they can really do whatever they want. They mm-hmm. can say, you're never going to see your grandchildren ever again.
Right. And the mom is it's always the mom who really has the ultimate say in
the matter. Yes, because she's got to deal with that stuff. Yeah. Like, whatever it is that, you know, is happening at your house or in your, you know, in your arena or whatever that she doesn't like, she's going to have to deal with that.
Right.
She'll find out what it is. They might not want to know.
Right.
Right?
And so when you have a problem with somebody and you want to say, hey, you know, let's clear the air, you have to always expect and be ready to be humble that it's something that you did.
Yeah. I've heard everything from people, too. I don't want you baptizing my kids. And you have said many times that if you have them, you will take them to church.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not everybody's plan for their children.
Right.
Right? Like, or whatever the situation is. Or you're going to teach their kids something that they don't think is right.
Right.
You know, or engage them in an activity that they don't think is appropriate. So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, they're missing a lot. She's like, can't think of a thing. I'm like, you can't think of a thing.
You can't think of anything.
Nothing.
She's like, we've never said anything to them. You don't have to say anything for people mm-hmm. to know what's on your mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not saying things. She'd probably be like, you know what? These mofos have never offered any advice when they saw we were struggling.
Right.
They've never, you know, given us a tip on anything. They've never said anything. It's like they just want to see the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know.
And they treat them horribly.
Yeah.
Not the kids.
And it's not,
so pointed.
It's not her fault you don't have any of the grandkids. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe think about
and
that.
It's not up to her to make your dreams come true as a grandparent. Yeah.
But I find that interesting sometimes to think about that, why none of your kids have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. So I found this. This was interesting. This is a festival called the Frozen Dead Guy Days.
What?
It takes place in Colorado.
Okay.
I think this started, you were in Colorado, but this might have started after this. Anyway, this started in like 2001.
Yeah.
Right.
That was gone.
So it's one of the most unique and quirky festivals in the country. It takes place in Nederland, Colorado. 3 days of frosty merriment. They have 30 bands and superheated tents. They have coffin races, costume polar plunges, a frozen t-shirt contest. Icy turkey bowling, a parade of hearses. Mm-hmm. They have the blue ball, which is the live bands, ice sculpting, frozen dead poetry slam, and a silent disco, and a frozen salmon toss. So this is a frigid fun festival, and it is commemorating the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. There's a guy on ice out there. This dude's grandfather.
Okay.
Is on ice.
Is on ice.
For real.
Okay.
So the history of it is 20 years ago, his grandfather, Grandpa Bredo, let's call him. So now he's 110. Mm-hmm. He died, right, over 20 years ago, and they decided they were going to do the cryo thing.
Oh.
So they put him on ice, hoping that there would be a time when they would come up for a cure for whatever he died from, which is old age. Good luck with that.
Okay.
Right? So they're saying he is, they're not saying he's dead. They say he's in a state of suspended animation.
Oh.
Forever, I would like to add.
Yeah, pretty much.
Forever awaiting the big thaw to bring him back to life. So the story is he died from a heart condition in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
He had a grandfather. He was in Norway. He enjoyed painting, fishing, hiking, blah, 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 whatever. And he was the director of Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. So I guess when he died, he decided that he wanted to be packed in dry ice and that the body was going to travel to California to a cryogenics lab there, where he would remain on ice until they came up with a disease for his heart condition.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. So then he was in liquid nitrogen for 4 years.
Yeah. And then?
And then he was moved to Colorado in 1993 to stay with his daughter and his grandson, who are both advocates for cryogenics, or for cryonics, and who hope to someday start their own cryonic or cryogenic facility.
Okay.
But for now, he's just on some blocks of ice.
Oh.
In a shed.
No.
Right?
It's just straight up ice. It's none of that.
Yes.
Don't they?
But because of some, apparently, either his daughter was overstayed her visa here. Mm-hmm. So this is bizarre for me, for a Norwegian to overstay their visa in America and then get deported.
Yeah, that doesn't really.
Yeah. Well, it happened to these people. Okay. Somehow. White people never get deported.
No.
Are you kidding
me?
Especially not. I don't even know how they found this Norwegian.
Yeah. In Colorado. Get out of here.
So they evicted her because she was living in a house with no electricity or plumbing. All right. So she was living off grid.
Okay.
Basically. Whatever. I'm assuming she knows how to do this. So they were worried that no one would be there to take care of the grandfather. He would thaw out and I guess then spoil.
Oh, okay.
So, and then their cryonics facility, which is now just a shed with some ice in it, would be ruined. So then they went to talk to a local reporter, and they got the city council to pass a section of the municipal code, because apparently in Colorado there's some very strict laws about keeping a frozen dead person or an animal on your property.
Oh, yeah, what I would imagine.
Like, that's a problem.
Yeah, well, I can imagine with livestock, sure.
Yeah, but it specifically says no people. You cannot have a frozen dead person on your property. You just can't do it, right? You can't do it. Luckily, this guy was, quote-unquote, grandfathered in, so he could stay there. Yeah.
No pun intended.
So, the grandson was worried about what was going on. The daughter had to go back. So they put a job ad out for a guy known as the Iceman. And every month this person comes with a team of volunteers and they put 1,600 pounds of dry ice and they repack this guy. He's in a sarcophagus with foam padding, tarp, and blankets. And they have to keep him at negative 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So at the same time, you can take a tour of this place. It's a dude on ice. Filmmakers have come. There's volunteer psychics come to talk to the Iceman. And now this guy's been frozen.
But he gives them the cold shoulder.
Yes. A cold stare. He's been frozen now for 20 years. And he's kept hope alive for his family.
Yes.
This is ridiculous. He let him go.
So they have a party for this?
So every year they have it started out as a small party. And now it's a festival.
Well, that's what I call a frosty reception.
Oh. Frozen Dead Guy Days. It's 3 days of, I guess, celebrating the fact that this dude's on ice.
I love my thing. All right.
I'll give it to you.
Okay.
How weird is that?
It is
gone.
A weird thing. It is a weird thing. to celebrate that kind of thing. But at first, when you started talking about this, I was like, oh, out in Colorado, it's a different way of handling the winter. Like on the east, sure, everyone's like, it's cold. And because we have like a wet cold. They have a dry cold, and it's not that unpleasant.
Yeah.
In Colorado.
But I want to know why you have to pass a law making sure that people don't keep dead bodies on ice.
Well, because people are doing it. And you just like you have to pass laws, you have to safety seal things.
But how are you going to bust someone doing that?
Maybe they'll just make people not do it as much.
Like all the other laws that we have.
But I thought this was going to be some kind of like festival, like about the dead in the winter or something. But no, it's an actual dead guy.
It's just an actual dead guy. I mean, they have, like I said, they have coffin racing, hearses. Like they're celebrating the fact that this guy is dead on ice. I feel like I'm not a religious person. I'm not a spiritual person. But let him go.
Yeah.
I don't think that we have the technology right now. Like, just on the to put a body on ice for this long and then somehow revive it.
Yeah, it's not going
to
be.
And is that the right thing to do? Surely there are other places to put your resources.
Yeah, we need some decency.
This guy would be dead by now anyway. Yeah. He'd be 110 by now. So even if he had made it, he would be surely deceased by now.
And what does the party do? Like, is it a fundraiser or is it just a party?
I mean, I'm sure the people who, you know, they must make money. I'm sure they sell a lot of beer. They have this frozen salmon toss. Someone's got to buy the salmon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people got to stay places. They have bands. It's only $20.
Oh.
And when I looked online, this is, I think, another example of kind of a middling Colorado town trying to get some tourism.
Yeah.
At first, they were probably like, oh, hell to the no. And then they were like, wait, we're never going to be Aspen.
Yeah, right.
But we got this guy on ice.
Yeah.
And people are coming here. So I saw images of it. It looks like a really fun party. People dress up as the dead.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's like a costume party, kind of like a little bit of Halloween, a little bit of costume stuff. And they just party. They have a lot of bands that come out and play.
They like come out in the dead of winter for this party.
Yeah. For this party to keep hope alive. He's gone. Grandpa is gone. He's not coming back.
He's not coming back. Nobody's going to resuscitate him.
Eventually, by accident, he's probably thawed out. It's like chocolate. You know what I'm saying? If it's in the car for too long, it melts, and then it solidifies again, and it melts and solidifies again. This guy's screwed. It's over.
It is over.
It's over.
Speaking of things being over, we got, this is an email we got titled, Law Student Found Dead at Penn Law.
What? Okay.
And it's actually from your husband.
Okay.
Who sent this? He said,
legal news.
Yes, it's legal news. Is UPenn tainted with a reputation of death?
What happened?
Yes. So, the state of Pennsylvania is dealing with the death of another student this month. This time,
another student?
Yeah, was part of the law school. They've had an unbelievably rough year dealing with student and faculty deaths.
Jeez.
Yes. Apparently, 9 have passed away.
Unnatural causes?
No, they've been caused by various things, including homicide, plane crash, and suicide. But people are dying. And the latest death is of a first-year law student found in his dorm-like apartment. Yeah, he was 25. He just returned to the school after a leave of absence.
Mm-hmm.
And, they found him dead. But it's like...
What did he die from? Do they even know?
It says here, I'm scanning through here, no, they don't really know. But he's dead. There's a couple of deaths that have happened. There was a plane crash. There was somebody else that was found in a shallow grave with 20 stab wounds.
What?
Yeah, it's...
All associated with this university?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is like a Law and Order thing. It's like Hudson University.
Yeah. And that one, investigators believe the death was fueled by a homophobic rage involving a high school classmate. Yeah.
Ooh, what's going on?
I know, exactly. So the question is, it's like, is Penn Law, is it going to be tainted with this reputation of death? And is it like a thing? It just happens to be like a big cluster going on right now.
I would say ordinarily, like in the past, maybe yes. But now people just want to get into school.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think that
I don't think it's going to do anything. It's not
there's
like...
There's so much crazy stuff going on right now. People are like, yeah, of course. It's extended to this as well. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it just happens a lot of people at this point in time are dying.
Yeah, from mysterious causes.
Yeah, or a variety.
Not mysterious, like, but like a variety of causes. It's turbulent times.
Yeah.
And it's a big school.
And I don't think it's going to be tainted.
I don't. I probably not.
Yeah.
People just want to get in the schools. They don't care.
But thank you, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. So here's a little bit of wine news.
Wine news.
So right. I will see how you feel about this. Here's the situation. You have had a stressful business meeting.
Okay.
You're staying, you know, your company has put you up in a hotel. You get back to your hotel room, and all you want is a glass of wine.
Sure.
And to watch the evening news.
Yes.
The problem is, you don't want to go to the mini bar because it costs a fortune.
Literally.
Like a bottle of, like, what's that stuff? Rex Goliath is like the price of Dom Perignon.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's a.
And we all know the Rex Goliath. It has the rooster on it. Don't drink it. It's the worst. It's like $6.99, and it's overpriced.
Yeah,
and like right. At the bodega.
They charge you an arm and a leg in the mini bars.
Yes. So they said, and room service will take you 45 minutes. And I've had this happen to me before. If you've ever been at a hotel, you order wine, it comes up in a saran wrap glass.
Yeah.
Like an hour later.
Yes. It's a glass of wine. They pour it, put saran wrap
yes.
on it. And
why?
So they don't spill it on the way up.
And you know what? Bring up a mini bottle.
Yeah.
Like on the plane. Come yeah. on. Don't bring up a saran wrap glass of wine. So a number of hotels have found the solution to this. There's a device out there called the Plum Machine.
Okay.
It looks like maybe the size of like a big computer screen. Mm-hmm. It's a square. It's $1,500. And what it does is it dispenses wine by the glass.
Okay. And
to you.
Is it in your room or
it's
on the
in
floor?
In your room.
Oh, okay.
It's in your room. So it says it's for the hotel guests. You have a touch screen. It tells you about the wine, the mm-hmm. tasting notes. If you're a fancy person, you can tell them before you get there, I don't want Rex Goliath in this thing. I want Josh.
Okay.
Or whatever it is. I want the Pinot Project.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is that you want. Whispering Angel. Mm-hmm. I want a rosé in there. So the first hotel to have is a Four Seasons in Silicon Valley, where there's like fast-paced clientele. They want high-tech amenities. Mm-hmm. I say, too, why don't you just go down to the hotel bar and get a glass of wine?
Yeah.
Really?
Or why don't you just put it in your bag? Put a bottle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, listeners, as Katie would say.
Yeah.
Listeners. I get my wine at the airport.
Yeah.
Or, like, on the way to the hotel.
Right.
I get a couple of bottles of wine because I know I'm going to be drinking it. And if I'm going to be drinking it in my room, I don't want to pay $1,000 for it. So this is a stainless steel cube. It sits on the sideboard. It takes up very little room because the hotels have been finding that people are not using the mini bar. So mini bar sales are down 28%.
But because it's expensive.
Why don't, instead of paying $1,500 to put this wine dispenser in, why don't they just put wine in there at a price that makes sense
exactly.
to people? And boo. I mean, come on, you cannot sell somebody a nip of Bailey's for $15.
Yeah.
When they can go down to the bodega and get it for like $4.
Yeah, just, single serving sizes, put
yes.
it in there.
And at the right price. Because people are BYO anyway. Mm-hmm. They have to, right? So the prices
on
this.
What they do with the mini bars now? Because the trick used to be, you can drink from the mini bar at like your Heineken or something and then mm-hmm. go to the store and replace it.
With the same Heineken.
Yeah. So when you get there, you don't have to rush off.
Oh, now
to
you
store.
Can't. Because if you move it.
Because if you move it, there's a sensor that says that you.
But again, this makes me feel like I'm paying good money. I'm a client. Why are you treating me like a criminal?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you having things that are sensitive? Like sometimes when Greg and I are at a hotel, we just want to move that stuff out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we can't because we know if we pick up that little 8 M&Ms in like a cube, it's going to cost us $20.
Right.
So here are the prices though. So again, this is where hotels, they're saying they're doing this because they're trying to fight back against Airbnb. I've used Airbnb a lot and frequently in the nicer places, they put wine, like the guest, the host leaves wine,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
like a nice bottle of wine and some nice glasses as like a thank you.
Yes.
And
yes,
like
yes.
snacks. All right. So hotels are coming up for a 2 ounce glass of Evesham Wood Pinot Noir from Oregon, nothing fancy. For 2 ounces, $5.25. First of all, 2 ounces of wine.
Please.
Don't even.
Are you even? That's an insult.
Yeah, what is that? A shot of wine?
Insulting us all.
If you want a 5 ounce glass, it's $16. This is not good.
Yeah.
These are not good prices. We are drinking $16 bottles of wine. Okay? $16 for a glass. There's something called a Justin Sauvignon Blanc. It is 4 and 12. So they went and they said the entire bottle, the Evesham Wood. So you could have one glass of Evesham Wood for $16, or you can go down the street and buy it for $14, a whole bottle. So, come on, hotels.
Yeah.
Like,
they have to stop. They have to find another way to make money than buy this.
Yeah. It's not working. Yeah. So this is the new thing that's going to be possibly in your room. I'm sure if you're on an expense account and you're some, like, tech bro, mm-hmm. and you really need to get your Evesham wood on, you will do so. But for the rest of us, we will be stocking up at the bodega.
And you make a great point, because a lot of business trips are mainly guys mm-hmm. on them that are able to do this kind of thing. Yeah.
But and then those guys want a glass, a 2 ounce pour. Yeah. You know what? As much as I besmirch those guys, I don't besmirch them so much that I think they deserve to not have the option of a 2 ounce pour. That's mm-hmm. wrong. 2 ounces of wine?
Yeah.
The only way I would do it if I would get a 2 ounce pour and a 5 ounce pour together for a nice healthy
yes.
diner where I can barely move the glass. I have to drink the first sip without yes. touching it because nice. It's so full to the top. That's what I want to see. Hotels.
That's right.
If you want to be Airbnb,
come on, hotels.
Or how about free wine?
Hey.
Okay.
Yeah, you would stay there.
Yes.
Very
free
easily.
Free wine?
During the off seasons or the slow time, be like free wine.
And not Rex, Goliath, or Josh.
Get a whole bottle.
Yeah. A jug.
Like, I'll stay here.
Yeah. All right, what do you have?
Well, it's springtime.
Theoretically.
According to the calendar, it's happening.
Yeah, it's still freezing, but sure.
Sure. But, you know, spring is a time of love and romance.
Mm. Great. I can't wait.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, if you want to be classy, here's how you court a woman.
Okay, with a K also.
With a K, but, you know, not date.
Court.
This is court. Courting is different than dating.
Not corner, this is court.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's not just like, now it's just, instead of just hooking up, if you really want to get to know someone and find a potential partner, then you court them.
Okay.
If you want to hook up, you just date.
Okay.
Okay.
That's going to be hard for some of the ladies out there who also want to hook up.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
is there a mix? Is there like a hybrid court hookup?
No.
No? Okay.
Not. Courting is courting.
Okay.
So, number one, if you really want to court a woman, you need to look within. What?
Huh? Excuse me, sir. I don't think so.
Where are you in your life? If you're still getting wasted every weekend and spending your weekdays going out with your Tinder matches, maybe you need more time to get it all out of your system.
Because if you want to be time for this much dating, is this what young people are doing? Same people are doing? They're exhausting themselves.
I don't know.
How many dates a week can you go on?
I don't know. How many dates a week? I mean, yeah, honestly, if you're working.
Well, say you do some kind of activity. Mm-hmm. Okay, we podcast, let's say.
Okay.
That's one night a week,
okay.
right?
Then you got the gym.
You have gym.
You have work.
You have your girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
You have work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So how many, like maybe 2 dates during the week? And then maybe on Friday? And you want to do Saturday?
It's 4 nights.
That's a lot.
You're out every night?
No wonder you're exhausted. You've run to the mill. You run a train on dating.
All right. So first look, then the next thing is dating and courting aren't the same. But like I was saying, dating is more casual. You're not necessarily looking for someone serious.
Okay.
Rather than just testing the waters and having fun and, you know, which is completely understandable. You can be doing that, but that's dating.
That's what my mom used to say, like, go out with Sam on Monday, go out with Phil on Wednesday. You mm-hmm. know, like that's the way they used to do it. Just date. You know, you have a meal with someone. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah. Maybe you'll see him again next week. Maybe not.
Right.
Nothing happens.
And courting is based on the idea of eventual marriage.
Well.
And if you shiver.
You're going to scare some people off right away.
I know. And if you shiver right now at the word of marriage, you know, yes, it's a big step. But courting is for someone who's really looking for somebody.
But don't you date and then court? Or you just go right into the courting?
Well, I guess this is assuming. Well, let's go to step three.
Okay,
and
step
we can
three,
get a
sorry.
Bigger picture of the courting scene.
Okay. Yes. I clearly know nothing of it.
Start off as friends. There's nothing more terrifying than meeting a guy who's already on his knees, ready to pop the question.
Yeah.
If you're courting,
we've all been there.
If you're courting, it's already assumed you're looking for something more serious.
Mm-hmm.
But to take the pressure off and start as friends, hang out in groups. See, you know, check out her personality, see how she interacts with people.
Did you hang out in groups?
It's hard now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how are you going to get, like, with a group of
another couple? Or you're hanging with four dudes.
I guess they're assuming that it's like in your college group of friends or something.
But even once I was out of college, it's still like my friends and I, we were all very social, but it was difficult for us to get together, just four of us women.
Yeah.
At one, you know.
And now you want to get
Their partners involved in as well?
Mm.
I don't know.
Here's another rule. A man pursues the woman. Yes, fellas. Listen. Modernize it however you please, but it's usually this... it's about the man courting the woman, not the woman courting the man.
Yeah, generally.
Yeah.
Most women aren't going to bother, and I think that's why men have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
because the man has to show the woman that he's worth it.
Yeah,
that
I mean...
he's worth it. Like, he can...
I find it very, very difficult to think about, like, trying to court a dude.
Mm.
I don't have time. You know?
Yeah.
Literally, I think that's what every woman is saying. Like, I'm so busy. I don't have time for that. Like, if he wants to come over here, like, feel, you know, step up. But really, no.
I'm not going to go through all the machinations.
I don't have time for this. Yeah. I'm trying to get I'm trying to move up in the world in my job. I've got all these things going on. I don't have time to be courting,
mm-hmm.
you know, Phil.
Yeah, women usually, if they really have their sights set on a guy... then it's not courting. It's like Mm-mm. kind of being around.
Yes. Hey. You know, I'm available.
I'm available, but not.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
I'm somewhat available.
Yeah. For courting, you can only court one at a time. It's not
Ooh.
Tinder. You're not courting someone. When you're courting someone, you're finding out if they're a compatible match for your future.
This is like all eggs in one basket. Okay.
Yeah, but you're really... but this is now that you found somebody that you think...
So here's the situation. So I'm being courted, mm-hmm. let's say. I'm hanging out with this guy as a friend. We're hanging out in groups. But meanwhile, I'm on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
Going wild style. All over the whatever quarter mile radius or whatever is on there.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy's still doing the courting. So the mm-hmm. other guys are getting the goods.
No, but I think it's the idea that you're exclusive to each other at this point.
Exclusively what?
Like dating, but courting.
That's what I'm saying. It's a tough sell. I wouldn't know.
No.
This
it's
sounds
like
the guy who ends up hearing about all my Tinder dates. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I thought he was gay. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's not, in number six, it's not about sex. Courtships don't focus on the relationship around sex.
So you're asking a woman to not have a lot of sex for a while. This is what it's for. Yeah, we're talking about young women here, right?
Yeah,
you're like, I'm courting you. It's like, that's great, but I'm also here screwing Phil.
Well, it's the idea that it's, you know, a lot of guys are like, if you don't put out, get out.
I think a lot of women are like that too, though.
Yeah.
That if you don't put out, get out, has transferred over, you know, that's a...
Yeah, and sex is important. You have to test drive before you buy.
In the court?
Yes.
When does that happen?
Somewhere.
The second half?
Got it, but these are all the elements.
Okay.
I'm going to mix up the...
I feel like I would be very confused as a young woman by this.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who's like kind of coming in and then dipping back out, you know?
It's all about family because your family.
Who?
Courtship has a strong sense of family tied to it.
Yeah. Really?
You want her family to approve of you and your family to approve
Most
of her.
Most people are nowhere near their families.
I know. This is kind of the thing, like...
Is a horse and buggy involved in this?
Remember The Godfather, the movie The Godfather, when Michael Corleone had to go to Italy to hide?
Yes.
Because he just killed someone?
Yes.
So
How
he's
are you
in the town, and he's like, look, I can't get back to K.
Okay.
I'll never be able to get back to America. I don't know when I'll be able to go back, so I might as well get things moving over here.
Okay.
Get this Italian... beauty.
Yeah.
In this, with a purple dress.
And get this going.
Yeah, and get this going. And so, but there, he can't just date. Can't just, like, one time in.
Yeah, yeah.
He has to court, and he has to say, what I want to do is marry you.
Ooh.
And he had to go through the family. He had to go on walks with her.
Ooh.
With the family trailing behind.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, and he had to show the whole family that he was totally legit into being a husband.
Wow. I think maybe this is why they just tried to buy women in earlier times, because who wants to do all this?
Yeah.
Right? Something at a sale. It sounds like a lot. Walking with the family behind? Why does that have to be uncomfortable? Do you know what I mean? Why does that have to be uncomfortable?
they can see that what's going on. She's.
I'm thinking about this too in a New York City context where people and no one's around their family really that much. So now you got to track this woman's family down
and say come for a walk
and force them to get on the F train in the car behind you and peer through the glass to make sure that you're doing this properly. Meanwhile, as I said, she's still screwing Phil.
Yeah,
because he's putting out. He is he doesn't even know about marriage or anything.
Yeah.
You know? This guy that's strolling. Right? Okay, so what else do we have?
Yeah, let's see. Be open with her about what you want.
Look, I don't want to screw you for like 6 months. I got to court. I got to get to know your family.
Well, tell her that that's what you're looking for to get married. And don't waste your time by courting a girl to find out she's not interested in having a family or getting married.
Okay.
So you've got it. That's the thing. It's not like it's
just. That's just be upfront.
Yeah. But this is not a surprise. Like when you court someone, it's not a surprise. You're like, I'm courting you.
Ha-cha.
It's like.
You sleep out of
it. It's like, I think they're at the point where they've met each other and they both want to get married and they're trying to say, hey, are we compatible?
This sounds like a white person sitcom from like the 90s, but okay. Right. We see how that turns out.
Oh, God. Hey, You Know It is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio, and you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying the gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
Courting,
court only when you're thinking of marriage.
Okay. Don't accidentally court.
Yeah.
Be clear about it.
You can't play any games about, like, the texting games, like waiting a few hours to reply, all that stuff. You have to be, like, totally upfront. If you want it, you have to work for it.
Okay. It being the marriage.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And not the usual.
And embrace your inner gentleman.
Okay.
This is the time where you'd be a gentleman and make her feel appreciated. Buy her flowers. Take her to dinner. Compliment her.
Do that anyway. You don't have to be courting to do that.
Yeah, it's true.
Please buy flowers and take people out to dinner, whether you're courting or just dating or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
You know?
That's courting. So
that's cool. And that's courting.
So enjoy your spring.
Enjoy it. So I just thought I would bring this up. We are doing barnyard news where we report on animals in the barnyard, out of the barnyard.
Yes.
We're getting domestic with it today. This is something I found out about dogs.
Oh.
So this is a new experiment shows that dogs understand whether a human or a dog is happy based on their facial expressions and vocalizations. No shit. This goes under water is wet. Of course.
Well, of course
dogs
they do.
Have been reading human beings for tens of thousands of years.
And they do it well.
And they do it really, really well. Otherwise, they wouldn't be up on our couch wearing, you know, wearing Swarovski crystal.
Like, yeah, right.
Like collars and things like this and living like fucking kings. All right. So they did this experiment. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Where are they going to find it? They only used 17 dogs.
It's what?
Yes, 17 pet dogs.
They already knew the answer. They're just going through the motions.
They put the canines through two rounds of experimentation in the lab. The first trial, each dog was placed in front of two screens, presented with an image of a dog or a human that was either happy or angry. Mm-hmm. The images were then paired with a variety of sounds. Playful or aggressive bark for the dog, and a phrase in an unfamiliar language. They used Brazilian Portuguese.
You know.
And you're assuming that these dogs are not bilingual.
Yes.
Or
right.
that our language means anything to them other than just the sounds.
Right, whatever.
So either an angry Portuguese sound or like a happy Portuguese sound. When exposed to both images, the happy dog and a playful. So if it was a happy dog or a happy smiling person and a playful bark or happy sound, they looked at it longer. if you showed them a picture of a happy dog and then you played a growl, the dogs were like, I'm not looking at this shit, and just started doing something else. Or if you showed a picture of, like, an angry human, but they were like, hey, come on, in Portuguese. In Brazilian Portuguese. Again, the dog was like, I don't think so.
Really?
I was thinking about this from someone who has a dog. When they look at a screen, what do they think? Mm-hmm. Like, they know it's not us. But what do they do? Are they just, you know what I mean? Like, what are they doing? Are they like, the show's not that great.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. What do they think?
What do they think?
When they watch TV.
A lot of times when I have TV on, my dog doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Is not interested in altered carbon whatsoever.
Yeah.
Occasionally when a dog comes on or she hears dog sounds, she'll look and then she's like, that guy. Like there's no... But if I put on something like Caesar Milan, she's all about it.
Really? So there's other dogs.
Yeah, other dogs, but with a human interacting with a dog. Or maybe it's just Caesar Milan. Mm-hmm. Or maybe dogs just like him. So they were testing to see if the dogs have the ability to connect emotionally with humans. And dogs, and whether that's instinct or learned behavior. And they said it's a sign of cognitive ability. Of course. They have to figure out, like, when you're a dog and you see another dog, you better be damn sure that Brohem is happy to see you.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're going to get chomped.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
we don't know what that dog wants. Is it romantic?
It's not. I don't think there's a lot of diplomacy amongst the dogs.
It's pretty clear. Like, they're not hiding their intentions.
Yeah.
I came over here to try to sleep with you. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're in heat. I'm a dog.
Well,
you know,
let's get going.
Or like, get away from my bone or whatever the situation is.
Well, this is where I pee, not where you pee.
Yeah. So she said it was quite interesting because it makes sense to think that dogs have the ability to connect with people. They don't develop it.
I see.
I think it's both, right? So I've had enough dogs that some dogs can read other dogs very well. Other dogs, I've had dogs where I'm like, dude, they're growling at you. Are you seriously wagging your tail right now? You're about to get your ass whooped. Right. Like, get it together.
Yeah, well, some of them are not bright.
Yes, just like some people are not bright. So the long short of this is that water is wet, that dogs have adapted to the human environment, and they are good at reading human emotions. They better be.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting, too, is that dogs know how to look cuter if they want something for you. So they kind of like turn their mouth down and make their eyes really big. They try to look like a puppy to like get an extra bone or something. So they're not stupid.
No, not at all.
They will stay, and they know that, like, I'm just going to keep staring at her. Eventually she's going to look over here and then I'm going to get a bone. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
And they'll just look at you.
That, yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, God damn. Like, here you go.
I used to do that.
What? Just stare?
Just stare.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah. My mom. She's like, get out of here.
Yeah, just stare. Dogs probably see us doing that as kids. They're like, yo, they got fed. I'm doing it. All right, what do you have?
Tales from the Campfire.
Oh, so Tales from the Campfire is a segment where we find tales in the end of the paranormal, folklore, fake lore, ghost stories, urban legends, and we retell
them here. Scary stuff here. Okay.
Gather around,
listeners. This one is called The Eerie Attic.
Okay. Eerie as in Erie, Pennsylvania, or eerie as in scary?
As in scary.
Okay.
It seems so cliche to start by saying I don't believe in ghosts, but however...
It goes without
that's
saying.
That's where I was coming from. That's where my head was at.
Okay.
All right. A few years ago, I moved into a one-bedroom apartment in Melbourne, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first time living on my own. The apartment block had been built in the 1930s. I'd been there a few months when I came home from work one day and went into the bathroom. I saw something strange. The wooden board covering a hole in the ceiling that led to a small attic space.
No.
All right, that's...
You didn't... I'm sorry. Before you moved in, you didn't inspect...
That there was an attic over the bathroom? Anyway, first of all, if there's an attic over the bathroom that you need to get in through the bathroom, I'm not going to live there.
It sounds like there's a peephole.
It has this wooden board covering the hole into the ceiling that led to the small attic space lay broken in two pieces on the ground. I examined the broken pieces. The board was an inch thick, and it would have taken a Bruce Lee to break it.
Really? It's one inch? Okay.
I thought the landlord had sent someone to work in the attic. I was frozen stiff with fear. I thought, someone is up there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I emailed pictures to the landlord asking if anyone had been there with an undertone of annoyance since she hadn't warned me.
With an undertone? A slight undertone.
Her reply read, please call me as soon as you are able to. I called and she explained that at least two tenants said the same thing happened. She promised to replace the board and she did.
Huh? Said what happened?
that the board broke and was in half and was on the ground. And two other tenants found that.
Okay.
A month later, I woke up one night around 4 a.m. I had so many goosebumps. It felt like someone was rubbing his or her hands on me.
What? That's a weird way of putting that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a goosebump.
I think of rubbing hands together.
Yeah. No.
But fine.
Everything was silent, but then I heard a sound coming from above my bed. Mm-hmm. It was a dragging sound, like someone pulling a sack of potatoes. I was frozen stiff with fear, yet again. I thought, someone is up there for sure. There's no way an animal could make that sound.
Mm-hmm.
After 5 minutes, I managed to work up the courage to turn on the light and walk to the bathroom. I was armed with a cricket bat.
Oh, I was going to say, I like your style. I wouldn't have waited 5 minutes. I would have taken up a position right away.
Show yourself. I know. When I looked, I saw the new board covering the hole was broken in two. I felt sick. The dragging sound had stopped. But I heard something else whispering. The sound was clear and coming from the attic. It sounded like children's voices, and I heard one sentence repeated over and over.
Bitch, but I have my money. What did they say?
It's your turn. It's your turn. It's your turn.
What?
It's your turn.
What?
It's your turn. No.
Are you kidding me? That's awesome.
I switched on every light in the apartment to make things feel normal.
Bitch, get out of the apartment.
It was 5 a.m. and dark outside. I watched TV to try to unwind. And then
No, stop. Do you think there's something in the ceiling? You're like, you know what? Maybe Hawaii Five-O was on. Old rerun. Some Columbo.
Yeah. Then the fuse blew. And my pet budgie, Dexter, whom I kept in the kitchen, usually never made a sound at night, but he started squawking like he was being strangled.
He was like, girl.
I never heard him make those sort of noises. He was screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed my car keys, ran out, sat in my car, and waited until the sun came up. When I saw people walking their dogs, this comforted me enough to go back in.
Are you insane? I hope the end of the story was I was slain.
The front door was open, but I thought I closed it when I ran out. I went to the kitchen to check on Dexter. They didn't take the dog.
Are you serious? What a bee.
Yeah. And he wasn't in his cage. I felt
sick. Oh, no, the parrot, right?
Is the budget. Yes, okay. Sorry.
What was it? We added a dog into the mix. Sorry, people.
I didn't mean dog. Excuse me. I felt sick again. All of my windows were closed. So
she left that bird in there on its own, squawking by itself.
I looked everywhere. When I walked in the bathroom, I heard splashing. Dexter was half drowned in the toilet.
What?
I took him out.
Too much back talk.
Washed him and dried him. I was so confused.
Flush him.
At 8 a.m., I called the landlord and gave her a watered-down version of the night. Oh, wow, you heard the whispering, too, she said.
Mm. That's the end of the story?
I stayed in that apartment for another 18 months.
Why?
I heard the whispering on a few occasions and twice the board covering the hole in the ceiling moved. Although I live elsewhere, the landlord recently called. She said that the new tenants had begged to speak with me about some of the stuff going on there.
You best believe I would have been under that hole with something with a pike.
Yeah.
Waiting.
And he's, forget it, it's their problem now. Doesn't want to talk about it.
That's insane.
Yeah.
The idea that people would stay anywhere after, once you hear something like voices, mm-hmm, it's time
mm-hmm,
to go.
Because mm-hmm.
there's somebody up there. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a really strange podcast about this, something similar like this happened to a woman. There was someone living
up in the attic. Yeah, right. Yeah, I've heard that too. That there is actually someone there who is.
Yeah, who actually, this guy was legitimately living there. He'd been living there for a while. He had nowhere else to live. And he was eating some of her food every once in a while. But other than that, he wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
He just, you know, there's a tight housing market, I guess.
No.
I don't know. I don't know what to say, but that's how it went. Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com.
Thanks.